as we work through this, let's. What I want to do is I want to have it opened up for discussion as we work our way through. All right, so it's going to be opened up for discussion as we work our way through. But I want this time to be a time of really helping us to improve our communication. You know, communication is one of those things that we do every day. We're talking to people every day. And those of us who are married, we're talking with our spouse. We're talking to neighbors, talking to people, friends, and people you meet in the store. We're communicating with people all the time. And yet communication is one of those areas where we often have a lot of problems. And we don't always communicate in the best ways. And so the little study really is aimed primarily toward communication in marriage and in family, but the principles here are the same for all of us. All right, so whether you're in that situation or not, these things can be helpful to you. And I want to read a couple of the quotes here in the first part there that stand out. These were both by a fellow named Les Parrott. And he says that, in the second paragraph, he says, couples report the number one problem facing marriage is breakdown in communication. And, you know, over the years, the people that I've discussed with and talked with and counseled with, I think I would agree. Communication is a big one. It's a big problem because if we don't communicate right, then we're going to have problems. And so many people don't communicate. It's amazing how many couples just do not communicate very well. They may, you know, not be angry with each other. They may, you know, communicate like pass the salt and when you're going to get home today. But as far as communicating and talking about their heart and opening up, and we're going to see as we work our way through here some of the different levels of communication that we're going to be looking at here. Then the second quote is in the next paragraph. It starts out there. Everyone grows up in a unique set of with a unique set of communication rules, and marriage forces two people with different sets of rules to renegotiate them. All right, now, as you think about this, most of us here tonight are married or have been married, and so as you think about these things, what would you say, you know, as far as this statement here, you know, two people coming from different backgrounds. I'll just start out with a little bit. Melody and I were completely different backgrounds in our growing up. I mean, she grew up in the city. She was a city girl. I was a farm boy. My parents had a good marriage. Her parents had a poor marriage and ended up splitting up a lot of the time she was growing up and ended up divorcing when she was in Bible college and not a happy home in a lot of ways. And so there's a lot of difference in our settings, in our background. And so we're bringing this kind of baggage into our marriage together and learning to communicate with each other. And, you know, the Lord has blessed and helped us to learn to communicate with each other. But, you know, that we've had different things that we brought into the marriage together. And there are even things that, you know, in my growing up and the things that I was used to, the things you just get used to the way that things happen. Mom and Dad always communicated with each other. All the years, Mom and Dad have been married now, let's see, I'm 64, they've been married 66 years. And this may sound strange, but I never, in those 66 years, ever heard Mom and Dad argue. Not once. Now, I'm sure they had their disagreements, but when they did it in private. And they did it quietly. And us kids never heard that. And that's amazing. So they had good communication. So it's a good thing for us to see in our, you know, growing up and with that kind of background and that's the kind of things. But, you know, all of us have come from different areas. And as you think about that tonight, you know, is there any comments that you can make, you know, that you have seen where the differences in the roles of communication that you were raised with made... Yeah, and we're not opening it up here for a family fight, all right? I'm not advocating that. But what I'm saying is there's things that you can see that were definitely differences, and you both know there was differences, but they could be a help to each other as we can communicate that. Any thoughts or comments on that from your situations, differences of your backgrounds?
My parents always agreed with each other. If I asked for something from Mum would say, "What's your dad say?" You know, I go to Dad and ask him, he'd say, "What's your mum say?" And we'll go back to Mum, and by the time I got sick of going to either of them, I've had enough of them.
Well, see, that's a good policy, though.
It is a very good policy.
Yeah, because it's good for the kids.
I also don't ever remember my mother and father arguing about anything either.
Yeah, it's good.
I don't know what they did after we went to bed.
Exactly. I mean, same with my parents. They're not angels. I'm sure that they had their times of spats, but they did it privately.
Maybe not.
I don't know. Maybe not. So, any other thoughts or comments?
Sometimes there's a difference between how men pick things up to how women. Women can say something and the man will hear something altogether different. There'll be a different meaning to what he's meant.
No, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
I think sometimes, you know, if you have that sort of thing, you should ask the other one, now what did I just say and how did you pick that up?
Hmm. Yeah, you know? Yeah, and we're going to work through that as we work our way through the book.
I can gather on this, maybe sometimes you can assume that person already knows, you know. So you don't need to communicate.
You never assume anything. I was always told assume is to make an ass out of you and me.
Okay, so then as we work our way through this then, you know, the more personally you can get involved in this study, the more you dig in and apply your heart to the study, the more you're going to gain from it, obviously. All right? So I encourage you to dig in, ask questions, write things in your book. I've highlighted things in my book and written a bunch of things in the margins to try to help us to gain. And I'm not going to just read through this thing. You've already had time to read that, but I want to just highlight some of the things that are mentioned here. And, you know, when we think about God creating communication, that's an important thing because God made us to be able to communicate. And he did so by creating us in his image and enabling us then to be able to communicate with each other like God communicates with us. And, you know, that's something that the animals can't do. I mean, yes, they can communicate to a degree. And I understand there's a little bit of communication between the animals. But at the same time, they don't sit down and talk about the weather, and they don't talk about what they're going to do for the day, and they don't discuss things, and they don't reason. They may be able to bark or meow or something and get each other's attention, but they don't communicate in the same way that we do. Now, communication is not about getting your point across. It's about hearing and understanding the other person, what they have to say. Now, let's comment on that one. Why is that true? Why is that difficult? Why is it difficult to not focus on getting your point across, but listening to what the other person has to say? John Ray.
We're usually very sure in our own mind that we're right.
Well, at least we want to think so. Yes, yeah. You're right. All right, that's good. Yes.
Yeah, busy thinking. It's a lot of thoughts, and so we don't always.
And along with that same line is, if we're in a heated discussion, all right, and we're debating, you know, often our mind is working ahead on how can I say it to defeat that, and we're not really thinking about what they're saying. We're trying to get our next plot ready to go.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts, Gary?
Hard as well because we just assume when we make a point, if they say anything, they shout, they must not agree. So we just get a bit, we don't want to hear them out. Because I just said something, you don't have to say anything back. Kind of thing. We didn't say that, but that's probably how we think. Why are we saying something?
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Okay. So the big thing here is that God wants us to then communicate. Right? So there needs to be going both directions. And then to acknowledge their right to communicate or to contribute to the conversation, it takes discipline. It takes work to do that. And we may not agree with what they say, but we need to allow them to say what they feel and to not get angry or frustrated. And sometimes that can be really hard, especially if we're discussing something that is touchy or something we have very strong feelings about. It can be hard to be able to do that and to listen to the other person without getting upset. And if they have an opinion that is quite contrary to ours, to be able to hear them out and not, you know, not let it get us emotionally shook up. All right? And so then he mentions here, and I think you've already noted if you've glanced through your book very thoroughly, I've used several different sources, a lot of different sources, and I put the footnotes in the back there. There's lots of different sources that I've used in this booklet, and I tried to put them in a logical, organized way, so that's why they're laid out as they are. But the author of this first little section here, he talks about clarity as our goal, not agreement. And that's an important thing. We need to make sure that we understand each other. It's not so much you've got to agree with me, but we need to understand each other, what our feelings are. Sometimes it's not just our vocabulary that needs to be understood, but it's the heart behind it. Why do I feel that way? And any thoughts on that? All right, so then he talks about harmony here. And harmony is not about about concession or compromise, but it's about harmony is to give. It's a give-give scenario. He says it's not a give-take scenario. All right, so that the harmony is we're working together on this. And, you know, that ought to be our goal. Anytime we're communicating, especially if we're discussing something, let's just say, for example, we're deciding where we're going to go on a holiday, all right? And, you know, one of us wants to go one place, another one wants to go the other place. How do you deal with that? Well, you need to just share your thoughts and your ideas, all right? So both of us are able to share. You know, she shares, this is why I think we ought to do here, and this is my reasons for it, and this is why I think it'll be better. And I can share what I think, and this is what my thoughts are, and why I want to do that. And then we need to work through those two and go back and forth, working through them, being willing to give and take, and to be able to come up with something that we can see as logical. And many times I've found, at least in our marriage, that when we discuss things like that, Melody will say things that I think, I didn't think of that. You know, I didn't think of that aspect of it. She says something, this is why I think this would be better. And I think, all right, well, that wasn't my thoughts. And I could see your point. And then if we'll work on that and then be willing to just say, all right, why don't we just do this? All right? And sometimes, you know, sometimes it may be a total compromise in a different way where we say, all right, well, let's not go to either of those places, just go to this place, and it kind of meets both of the needs, you know, or whatever that case may be. But you got to work through those kind of things. Any thoughts on that or any comments on that? Okay.
All right. In this other place, you know, it says a give and give scenario.
Yep.
But, on that part, I think it's a give and take.
Well, sometimes
there. Depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, each individual, as he says in the last statement there, each individual gives their own contribution and then works toward finding a harmonious solution. You know, what would be the things, you know, if we were to think of some characteristics that we have, what would be some things that interfere with this finding harmony in our communication? What would be some of the things that are about us that would interfere?
Okay.
All right, pride. That's a big one.
Right. Greed.
Greed. All right, greed and pride are similar, but they're different.
You take humility to listen, and you're not going to go into it with a willingness to listen and change. And
yes, exactly. John Ray.
I think I've been absent-minded, focused on other things. I mean, it's Some of this life gets so busy, people like literally it's so much going through your head, I've still got to do this, and you can hear somebody, but that's not necessarily listening. Like, just like in your mind you're like, yeah, just get on with it already.
And I know exactly what you're talking about, John, right? And that is true. You know, that sometimes we have, or maybe we've been working on a project and our mind is busy trying to figure out our project, and then something else, we've got to make another decision and our mind's still going on this project and I really don't want to talk about that decision over here. Let's just get it done with quick because I got to get back on what I was doing. And, you know, really what John Ray's talking about here, that really is a problem and it can be a hindrance. I think another thing here is sacrifice. We need to be willing to sacrifice for our spouse, especially for our family. To be willing to say, well, I don't have to have it my way. We just need to work together on this, and we need to all be in harmony and happiness. Yes, sir?
We really have Christian love for each other, whether it's husband or wife or anybody. Then we'll consider the other person more than ourselves.
Yes.
And I know I talk too much. Could I really try to concentrate on what people are saying to me and practice reflective listening? When you say, someone says, I've been really sick, and instead of going, yeah, I've been sick too, and you sort of go, oh, I hear that you've been sick, tell me more. You know, it's drawing the other person out and sort of giving them room to talk rather than me just blasting over the top of it.
Yeah, that's something we need to learn. You know, it takes practice and effort to do that. And
I think that's one of the blessings of being Christians, because we come to a prayer meeting and we do that actively. But once we leave here, where we look at other people are praying actively for people.
Yeah, that is good. And that's something that's very important, and we need to cultivate and continue to work at. All right, great. All right, let's go to the next page. God created us with the ability to communicate. There in Genesis 1:27, I kind of alluded to this a moment ago. How did God make humans unique to the animals, and how did this have a bearing on the communication with other humans and with God? All right, what are some thoughts there?
I hear you saying that Genesis 20...
What's that?
I hear you say that Genesis 1:27 is important, but I should...
Is it on?
Did you look up Genesis 1:27?
He created the image in God's image.
I was confused with what you were trying to get at.
All right. My communication isn't good. All right, Genesis 1:27, so it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he male and female, created he them. All right, now, what does that have to do with the way that we can communicate? Garrett.
Well, I mean, the first obvious thing that came to my mind was that because we're different from the animals cannot communicate. God made us, in a sense, like him, to be able to communicate.
Yes. Okay, that's really the big point. All right, and I kind of already talked about that earlier.
I think it's not so much a matter of did God make us able to communicate and not the animals. It's more to do with, because every living thing, to some degree, can communicate, even plants with chemicals. It's more like humans can communicate above instinctive communication.
Yes.
So an animal can communicate location, food, danger, instinctive things, but humans can go above that and discuss social constructs, philosophy, spirituality, and more complicated forms.
Yes. So human communication is got
is
more.
Of God's name,
yes, right? We've got.
He does what God has. He's God. Is, you know, he can think about higher ideas.
Yes. And see, that's why we're able to, because God made us in His image. All right. And so, because God made us in His image, and God is able to communicate in reason and work through things and plan and all these kind of things, God has made us to be able to do that too. So we can do that with Him, we can do that with each other, and that is a wonderful blessing that God has given to us. Yes, sir, Peter.
Part of that is that God is self-aware, and so are humans.
Yes.
Animals aren't really self-aware, they just go, food.
They're aware that something smells good, I want to eat it.
Not aware of themselves, how much as aware of things around them, but they can't communicate because they're not aware of other beings being self-aware.
Yes.
If we're all self-aware, we can all communicate.
Yes, Inika.
Well, when I first looked at that, I didn't just look at that, I went further down, and I thought, that's odd, you know, God created us male and female. Doesn't say anywhere that God created the animals, male and female.
Yes, it does.
That he did,
it does. It says it in chapter 1.
Not in this particular passage, he doesn't.
No.
So I thought, well, maybe because we were created male and female and the animals were not. I didn't know what you were trying to get at. Sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. Chapter 1, it talks about the male and female of all the animals. Chapter 1. So he did do that. But here he's talking about the difference here is has already been discussed, that God has created us in His image, and we're able to be able to reason, we're able to be able to share in love and fellowship and all of these things that animals can't do. Over in James chapter 3, all right, in James chapter 3, this is the communication chapter of the New Testament, James chapter 3, about the tongue, and verses 2 to 12 lists list the things that James uses to illustrate the tongue. What are some of the things in there? A whole bunch of them. I filled up all three lines. All right, so what were some of the things he used in there to communicate? Yes, sir.
Bits in the horse's mouth.
Okay, the bit. Yep, the bit. Like John or Garrett?
Like a fire.
Okay, a fire.
It's unruly.
Sorry?
Unruly.
Unruly. Yes, the tongue's unruly. All right.
I think the ship's rudder.
Yes, the rudder. Okay. Others?
Sorry, I missed the question.
Sasha?
A fig tree, Aaron.
Yes, a fig tree. Okay.
A little member.
Okay, it's a small member. It indicates that it's a small one. All right. Yes. So there's all these things here. He's talking about these. And then later on he talks about the grapevine, the salt water, the fresh water. All of these are pictures of the tongue and how we use our tongues. And so it's good for us to see these various illustrations. And you know, as he was using that, what was he getting across when he used the illustration of the bit and the rudder? John Ray.
It just takes a very small part of the anatomy. Like in a ship, the rudder is a very small component, yet its positioning has a huge impact on the overall body.
Yes.
And our tongue is a very small body part, but its actions can have incredible ramifications.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like what happens to us.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So in our communication, our little tiny tongue makes a big difference in our marriages, in our families, in our communications with others. Because our little tiny tongue can get us in a lot of trouble, or it can be a great blessing. And so that's what really the whole section here in James 3 is all about, to try to help us to see that. And then in Matthew chapter 7, verse number 12, Matthew chapter 7 and verse number 12, I'll read the verse and then we'll have one of you summarize it for us. Romans chapter 7 and verse number 12. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. What's our typical little summary of that? Yeah, it's it. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Yes. All right. So, you know, really, if we could apply that verse to our communication, most of the problems would be solved. Because if we really treated others with our tongue the way we want to be treated by them with our tongue, most of the problems would be resolved. Yes, John Ray.
I suppose that involves putting yourself in other people's perspective, like putting yourself in their shoes.
It is.
I mean, like, I think sometimes, like, we hear something like, you know, this person, pray for this person, they got cancer, and we're like, cancer is better than, you know, oh, Lord, please help this person, or, you know, like, just, I mean, not that we make light of it, but it's just kind of like a thought that we forget about, but, you know, if you took a moment to fix yourself, like, with some terminal disease or some agonizing situation, and you were like, oh, goodness, you know, that's quite anguishing, you know, like, you think about it a lot. Because, I mean, if it's not happening to you, it's a very easy afterthought, isn't it?
It's just that reminded me, is just you were communicating that, is that we're in the book of Hebrews, I believe it is, where the Apostle Paul tells us that we are to pray for those that are in bonds as though we were with them or something like that. That's kind of a paraphrase. But, you know, there's a lot of Christians around the world that are in prison, concentration camps. They've lost their freedom. And, you know, it does us good every now and then. I just read a book. Any of you ever heard of the guy named Eric Little? Peter, you ever heard of him? He was in China. He was an English missionary to China. And Eric Little, before in the 1930s, he was virtually the fastest runner in the world. He won the World Olympics in running. He was extremely fast. And yet they set up a thing where he was supposed to run the 100-meter race in the Olympics. And they assigned that event on Sunday. And he said, no, I won't run it on Sunday. And so he dropped out of it. And everybody booed him and thought, this guy's nuts. But they found out a few weeks earlier that that's what was going to happen. And so he switched and ran the 400 meter, which he was not used to doing. And the Lord gave him a gold medal in the 400. And anyway, he was a great missionary, or great athlete, but then his parents were missionaries in China, and he went back to China, and he spent 2 or 3 decades in China, and he was there during World War II and got stuck in a concentration camp. And he was there for about 5 years in a concentration camp, and listening to the depravity of that camp and the difficulties of that camp and the starvation and the hunger and the hardships, and then around it, it was surrounded by electric fence, and it wasn't like the kind of electric fence that we put around our cows. It was high power electric fence, and a kid went up to it and touched it one day and dropped him dead just like that, and so it. And you see that in your mind. It does us good to read books like that about situations like that to help us to see there are people in our world today that are going through those very same kind of things. And so, yes, that was a good point to bring out there, Jean. I appreciate that. And then Matthew chapter 22 and verse number 39 is another one. Matthew 22 and verse number 39. Matthew 22, 39. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love thy neighbor as thyself. All right, now, as we think about this one here, to summarize that, you can't hardly say it any other way, so I guess I just wanted you to look it up and be able to say it there. But God wants us to love others like we love ourselves. How exactly, what does that entail, to love somebody else like we love ourselves?
Well, to care.
All right, to care for them.
Yeah, almost like we just discussed, like Peter said, it's not just to hear, but really to listen, and then to care about what someone says.
So caring about them sufficiently enough to be able to say, yeah, I'm caring for you just like I'm caring for me. And I want to do for you what I would want you to do for me if I was in the same situation. Somebody mentioned earlier about how that's putting yourself in their situation. That empathy. And empathy is a big part of communicating properly. Empathy is that feeling, not of sympathy, but empathy is putting ourselves in their situation and say, just like was brought up here a moment ago, how would I feel if I was in that situation? How would I respond? What would I feel like? And that would help us tremendously in caring for others, caring for our family, caring for our spouse, caring for our children. If we put ourselves in their situation and say, how would I feel if that was me? And really try to act it out, live it out in the way that we communicate with them. No, it's not easy, but that gives us a responsibility then of trying to picture ourselves in their situation and trying to put yourself in that situation. How would I feel if that was the case? And if I was in that situation, what would I perhaps feel like? And communicate and asking them questions, then, how does that make you feel? Help me understand. I don't really understand what you're talking about. And how do you, you say that hurts. What do you mean it hurts? Describe that for me so I can picture it in my mind, because I really can't grasp that. Those kind of things we can bring up to be able to help us communicate better. John Ray.
Communication is also as much about timing as well. I mean, you could have the right question and the right intent, but you could still do it at the wrong time.
Yeah, we'll get into some of that later in the book, but that's a big one. And us guys, it seems like maybe I'm speaking for myself, but I'm notorious for finding the wrong time to say things.
Yeah, I was speaking.
But it's.
Did you?
Alright, so let's move on here before John Ray gets barbecued. Alright, consider the ways that we communicate. These are just some basic things that this author put together here. We communicate visually, but things that we actually do to be able to be communicative. Verbally, that's probably the most obvious, but I highlighted there the harsh voice because that's one of the things that I struggle with. I can say the right thing, but I say it in a harsh way and then it ruins the whole thing. But then there's the notes and letters, smiles and frowns, with our body and our hands and our feet, we communicate. That's one of the things as preachers, you know, some preachers are really good with gestures. Mine are kind of boring. But some guys are really good with their gestures and they have, you know, and that helps. And we do it ourselves too with each other and communicating. But, then with our, by your presence or absence, you know, that is a way to communicate. By touch and pat and hugs, you know, we can say a lot of that in our marriages, you know, that can help us communicate. By helping each other, by gifts. And sometimes people use gifts as an excuse for covering up all their other problems. And that's not a solution to everything. And gifts can be a kind gesture, but it's not a solution.
Isn't it a verse of Proverbs that talks about why we want to, like, give gifts? I think there's something about gifts in Proverbs.
Well, when it's talking about gifts in Proverbs, in that context, I'm pretty sure it's talking about bribery.
Oh, okay.
So someone is bribing somebody to do it their way. And but in gifts, even in a marriage, sometimes can be bribery. And that's not a good thing either. So we do have to, you know, evaluate our motives there. Then by the use of our talents and our gifts, the things that we do to be a help and a blessing to others around us, by willingness and unwillingness to share, you know, sometimes we just don't want to share. And, you know, when we don't share, we're not really communicating in a tender, loving way. Listening or not listening. Any other thoughts? Maybe did you write down anything else? Yes.
Love, especially when you're dealing with children. To some children, a touch means everything, whereas to others, they want to give someone to be helped, someone time spent with you. Everyone has a different love language, so you need to know the love language of the person you're dealing with if you're going to show them love. Well, you know, they might give you a gift, but you really want them to wash up the dishes for you, you know, that would tell you that they love you.
So what do you suppose is involved in developing that in individual people? No, I guess what I was saying is not us trying to figure out their love language. What causes child A, B, and C to have different love languages?
No idea, but it's a real thing. There's like five of them. It's like acts of service, quality time, gift giving, words of affirmation, and physical touch.
Yeah,
and it's a real thing. Like, if you ask your person, like, what means the most to you, like, I'm acts of service and quality time. Like, that's me. I'm not really, like, a physical touch person. Like, I'll touch him, but, like, no one else. Like, that's me. Mm-hmm. And, like, if someone says something to me, I'm like, that doesn't mean much. Like, do something for me. And that means a lot. If someone gives you the dishes for me. It's a real thing.
Yeah,
but I don't know why.
Wait,
good question. But no difference.
Or two young grandsons are completely different. One will give grandma a hug, and the other one, nothing to do with that. You know, he's completely different. I mean, he's cute and he's gorgeous and I love him, but he's not the same as the other one. He just doesn't like talk and choose the two of them.
Okay, so that was a good point that Ruth brought up here, and something that we need to observe and watch, because we all have those things. And, you know, I think that is something even in a marriage, when we bring in, that's part of the baggage we bring into our marriage. If one of the spouses is used to one way of communicating and another spouse is used to another way of communicating, and I do what I think would be the loving thing to do, and she says, that's not what I want. Yeah, and then it doesn't work very well. I see. Yes. Yep. So we got to work at that communication. All right. Good. Good. Anything else to add to this list?
I think the better you get to know the person that you're dealing with, the better armed you are.
Mm. Yes, and that's the same way with God. The better we get to know God, the better we'll be able to communicate with God. All right. Great. All right. And then just I want to end here tonight just by looking briefly at these two lists of levels of communication. And we'll stop there at letter F and pick up there the next time. I won't get into those questions there, but, well, I guess they're really basic ones. We'll get through them. All right, so there's a, Gary Smalley says that there's a cliche level where it's just, you know, how did the day go? The facts level that looks, you know, just basic facts about the day. Opinion level, we're sharing our thoughts and opinions about things. A feeling level, where we're willing to open up a little bit about our feelings, and then the transparent level, where we just let people know that we truly need. And, you know, a lot of people struggle with the transparent level. And yet that's where we need to strive, especially in our marriages. Then Wayne Mack gives a similar list here, but a little bit different as well. Cliche level, the casual conversation, we're just talking about the basic things, the sharing information and facts, supportive, encouraging and motivating, planning or decision making. And then the last three, I think, are really key ones. Sharing ideas, opinions, feelings, emotions, and judgments. The next level, the corrective, instructive, reproving, and challenging. And then the final level is disagreements and controversial issues. Now, these last three, you know, these last three are sometimes tough to be able to talk, even with our spouse, sharing our ideas, our opinions, our feelings, our emotions, and judgments. You know, maybe we would conquer that one. But then the next one, being corrective and instructive and reproving and challenging, that takes a proper attitude to deal with that without even hurting our spouse's feelings and things like that. We've got to be able to do it. But that, it needs to be done. Right? There needs to be this kind of communication, but that is a communication that is, you know, like he says, this, in his opinion here, it was level number 7, and then the last one there, disagreements and controversial issues, where we're dealing with things that we know we disagree on, and yet we can talk about that and work through that and come up with some kind of a harmonious way to deal with that. Right? And then these letter F there was just, which level do you feel is the most difficult? On mine, I put 7, I think, was the most difficult. And the levels that pose the most potential conflicts, I said 6 to 8. But any other thoughts on those things?
Well, I have number 7 to the name on that other one, number 8.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's when I keep thinking to myself when I work for the quality.
Yeah, so, you know, all of us are different. And so we have to work through that. And then letter G here, might as well finish this section, then we can start with 2. In our own words, what does Matthew 7, 1-5 say about communication? All right, now, maybe I should wait and save this for next time, because there's a lot we can discuss about this. I think we need to just stop right there. Let's just stop there. We'll pick it up at G next time. Because there's lots that I want to talk about on this little section. I didn't hardly give you enough room to write much there either. So next time, go ahead and start there with letter G. And then this next section is more of a reading section. And it's somewhat long, but I want you to read through number 2. It's about four or five pages long. But it's written by a guy named Rob Flood that, as I read through, I thought, you know, there's a lot of really good principles there. And so he talks about various principles there. There's nothing to fill in the blank, but I just want you to read it and be prepared to discuss it next time. We'll talk through that, and I'll go through it and highlight some things, and we'll just discuss it when we go through. All right.
Can you be clear?